the red, red robin comes bop-a-bop-a-bopping along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing.
Welcome to the Red Robin Podcast Heritage Cast with me, Chris Johnson, and Joe Appleyard.
Get up, get up, get out of bed, cheer up. Cheer up, the sun is red, live, love.
Welcome to another Heritage episode of the Red Robin Podcast, and this week's guest is definitely a star that got away. When Andrew Heffernan joined the Robins in 2017, he was unheard of in the Northern Hemisphere, but that was soon to change. Heff was instrumental in a campaign which saw the Robins return to Super League at the first attempt after a disastrous 2016. In the 2018 Super League season, the 23-year-old centre suffered multiple concussion injuries and he was stood down for the remainder of the year on medical advice before being released to head home to Australia and sadly cut his career short to receive further treatment. We will speak to Heff about the highs and lows of his short career and also discuss what the future holds in his new venture of sports performance and rehab and what could have been. Here's the latest Heritage Cast with Joe Appleyard, Chris Johnson and Andrew Heffernan. It's great to have you on the podcast, Heff. Thanks for coming on, mate. Obviously, we've spoke a bit before with it record, but, you know, for the fans listening, how's things over there? Obviously, you're in New South Wales. We've still got a few restrictions over here. It was announced in the past few days that, obviously, Sydney, there's been a bit of an outbreak and it's going up in the cases. But how's life over in New South Wales at the minute with all the COVID restrictions and, you know, what's happening with you?
Yeah, obviously, things are flaring up a little bit up in Sydney. I'm down in Canberra, so a little bit removed from it, I guess, myself. And ACT's kind of got their own, I guess, being its own state and territory, it's a little bit different in that we got different sort of restrictions and whatnot. But at the moment, things are pretty well as COVID normal as they can be down here. And we're, I guess, trying to steer clear of Sydney as much as we can, so we don't have to go into any sort of lockdowns or have any restrictions. But yes, I guess from a point of view of that, there's, you know, still some comings and goings in terms of, you know, I know in my space in coaching, certain athletes, you know, not being able to go home or come back in. So also with that going on. So that's been interesting. But yeah, no, otherwise, I think Australia's doing pretty well. So it's all good.
Yeah, it isn't when we, you know, sometimes we can watch the NRL games if we, you know, we're not at work and stuff, especially the weekend games. It's just great to see them full stadiums again. And obviously, it's State of Origin season at the moment. You're from New South Wales, so you'll be happy how the Blues are going. When we watch the Blues, I mean, you look at some of the players now, like Tedesco, the Trbojevic brothers, Isaac Yeo, Latrell, Josh Adokar. They're just freaks, aren't they? And it's brilliant to watch over here. But for you guys who obviously support New South Wales, you got one over Queensland. It's playing again, second game on Sunday. New South Wales rugby's in a good position at the minute, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think that it kind of ebbs and flows with New South Wales and Queensland in terms of, I guess, who the people are that are, I guess, leading those teams. And Queensland have gone through such a big period where they've had, you know, the likes of Smith and Thurston and Cronk and Slater and those guys. And they've been at the helm for such a long time, sort of steering this side in. And even when one or two of them were out for different reasons, for injury or different reasons, they can still sort of steer the ship. And so there's a bit of a, I guess, a changing in the guard, I think, for Queensland. And New South Wales are sort of pouncing on that a little bit. And I think Queensland did well to get through the series winning last year. I think that was probably a little bit unexpected. But yeah, definitely from a New South Wales point of view, there's a lot of youth there. There's a comes down to, I think, at origin level, it's big in terms of combinations. You know, if you can bring club form and bring combinations from that sort of setting and bring them into the origin arena, it's, as you can see, it's such a physical and fast game. And so I guess under fatigue and under pressure, trying to make those decisions with players that you haven't played with, that makes it hard. So I think it's been really well selected, like in the New South Wales team. So it gives me always a bit of pride when you can kind of give it to your mates up north who are Queensland supporters. And I remember as a kid, you know, you'd be sitting in the lounge room and you'd have a Blues jersey or even a blue shirt on. And I remember they used to read out, first of all, as the intro for each team, they'd introduce the player and then they'd talk about your junior club. And I remember, you know, sitting in front of the TV and trying to pretend as if I was one of those, you know, one day. And I think it is, for an Australian player, Origin is up there with one of the pinnacles within the game for us. So for some, it might even, you know, take premise over even playing for Australia. It's such a big thing. And in terms of viewership, the amount of people that watch the game itself is absolutely astounding. Like them, you know, millions and millions. And even if you're not that interested in rugby league, or you're generally interested in sport, or just interested in a rivalry in general, people will tune in and have a look, because the games are tight, they're physical, and it's something that, you know, there's a real rivalry there that people love to see.
Yeah, it's a global spectacle, in it, and you mentioned the intensity, and you mentioned when you used to watch it as a kid. Take us back, Andrew Heffernan. You know, obviously as a child, rugby league's the national sport. It's like football or soccer over here, whatever you want to call it. But I think that is why New South Wales, Queensland, Australia, so dominant, because when we've spoke to people like Dobson, Clint Newton, who's come on the show, we speak about youth and how vital it is. Over here in Hull, a big rugby league city that we are going to speak about your time at Rovers soon. At the minute, I think we've only got 7 or 8 amateur clubs due to COVID and due to numbers and participation levels. Whereas over there, you've got 10 in each little suburb that they call it, don't they? And every kid wants to play for New South Wales or Queensland. For you growing up, where was you at? How did you get involved in the sport?
Yeah, I was probably a little bit of a slightly different story. I kind of grew up in Junee out in the country, and we, you know, I guess in my sort of school class or in a small country town, it, you know, there would have been only sort of 10 boys in the whole year. And of those 10 boys, there was probably about 8 or 9 of them that were playing rugby league. And, you know, we'd play around at lunchtime and whatnot. And I started out in soccer, and I can't remember the reason why, probably because I think, you know, thinking at that age that maybe it was mum and dad thought that, you know, it might be a good starting place. It's not so rough or whatnot. And I remember coming home from school one day because the boys in the class were, you know, they'd made up this rule that you weren't allowed to play at lunchtime if you didn't play on the weekends. And I went, well, that's got to change. So I went home and said, I want to play rugby league. And that's kind of how it started for me. And, you know, from there on, everyone in my year played rugby league. It was only either rugby league or soccer, what you call football. So there wasn't many options out there. You know, there wasn't the whole wide array of sports that you could play. So everyone just lived and breathed rugby league. Everyone had a team. Everyone would go to the games. You know, you'd travel from here, you know, even 5 hours to go to Sydney or a few hours to Canberra to watch games, NRL games. And when those NRL players came out to your area, you know, it was the first thing you did was get yourself there and get to meet them. And so that was pretty cool. And I think coming out of Junee, we had Laurie Daly, you know, so that was a big legacy. My dad played with Laurie, and, you know, Laurie was only about a 15, 16-year-old at the time. So that's kind of a cool story. And Laurie ended up actually presenting me with my country jersey, that country New South Wales jersey at 16. So it was, you know, nice to sort of catch up with him and I guess the career that, you know, I guess everyone would know he went on to have, you know, playing for New South Wales, Australia. And went through a really good period with the Raiders as well. But as you say, I know definitely for me, being in a rural area, it was rugby league was kind of everything. And there probably is now, there's probably a bit more of a battle between different sports. AFL is really big here. So Australian rules football is really big. And rugby league would probably be in and around that as well. And as you say, we don't have as much of an influence with football and soccer. So, yeah.
And how about your time at Canberra, Hef, and coming through the ranks there? And obviously then you went on to feature in the Auckland Nan squad. Just tell us about how you came through Canberra and what that experience like was coming through their youth system.
Yeah, brilliant. I was lucky enough that I was 14, I think, or turning 15 at the time. And the way that you kind of got picked up in Australia was I was playing in the school-based comps, and you trial for the rep teams through through school, and I was doing quite well with those, and had progressed to the different levels and got up to sort of the New South Wales Catholic side, which is one of the sort of top teams. And I got an offer from offers from different, managers and clubs and whatnot. And I remember the first time I got exposed to it was I played in a trial game out in the bush, probably 4 or 5 hours from even from Junee. So it was really quite remote in that respect. And we went out there and played a game, and we got home that, trek back home. Dad drove me out there, and I thought I had a reasonable day. I was a little bit worried, early in the day, and then I sort of finished reasonably strong and got myself picked in the team. But got home, and there was a whole bunch of voice messages on the phone from heaps of different managers and different clubs that had sort of reached out. And it was kind of this real moment of, okay, maybe this could be something that I could make somewhat of a career out of. And that was super exciting, as a 15-year-old sort of kid, that potentially NRL clubs were interested in you. And I think you're a little bit naive at the time and think that, okay, I'm definitely going to, play NRL or go on. But at the time it was really exciting. And, I slowly learned about how the managers work, and, there's always going to, managers can have a number of different players, and I guess, but at the time you feel really special, and it kind of gives you that drive to really kick on and do well. And I end up making the decision on going to Canberra, because at the time Canberra's probably only about 2.5 hours from sort of Junee. So it was going to be, in terms of commuting to there and being a part of their academy system and working through the ranks, it was going to be a little bit closer to home. And, my parents placed a fair bit of emphasis on, making sure I finished school. And so that's the decision I kind of made, is that I would stay in their system and I'd come over and train a couple of times a week and play some trial games with them, but I'd stay at school in Wagga, which is not far from Junee. And then I end up moving over at the end of school. So I finished school, I was still 17 at the time, and moved over to Canberra. And that's sort of where my journey started. I started as a cadetship, which was basically just doing a whole bunch of different jobs they needed around the club, and working with high performers, so helping out with the strength and conditioning. And at different stages, I'd get thrown on as part of the NRL team just to help out, jump on a wing or something like that in training, just to help out, which is, again, fast forward, it was just a whirlwind, because then all of a sudden I just moved to Canberra, and now I was getting the chance to play, at least train with, or, hang around these guys who, I'd idolised, and watched growing up and was around them, which was awesome. And I, came out of that, and I played in the first sort of under-18s game for that year. And I'd done a tour, actually, of England, France and Wales just prior with the AIS throughout. And that was my first taste of sort of Europe, and came back and played an under-18s game. And fans might know Tevita Pangai Jr. and I, he's at the Broncos now. We would come down off the kickoff of under-18 season, and I tried to put a good shot on and dislocated my shoulder. So that was the end of that for a little while. And got a chance to sort of get surgery and come back 15 weeks sort of later, and was able to find a spot in the under-20s team. And that's where things sort of snowballed for me. I finished the year quite strong. I was in a really successful team with a lot of guys who went on to play NRL, and got a chance to train with the NRL squad from there. And things just kind of developed in terms of the opportunities I got off that. And that's when I got my opportunity to play in the first ever Auckland Nines. Is after my sort of first season in under-20s, I started the year in under-18s and injured myself, and got a chance to go to 20s and into the Auckland Nines. So in the space of sort of 12 months, I'd progressed a hell of a lot quicker than I thought I would. And that was unreal. To go over there and play in that format, which to me sort of suited my gameplay style down to a T, is, that open space and whatnot. And, the short few minutes that you get on the field, it's just so intense. And it was, loved it, absolutely loved it. And again, that just drove me even more when I come back to, I guess, the regular season. How can I get myself into an NRL opportunity, or keep staying in this NRL squad? So
yeah obviously you mentioned the time at Canberra there. I just wondered if you had any opinion on the Josh Hodgson situation at the moment. Obviously, former Robin over there who's had a really good start to his career in Australia, but seems to be a bit of noise, don't they, at the moment about Josh Hodgson and whether he's going to leave Canberra Raiders or whether he's going to stay. And we've seen George Williams depart and, you know, that maybe that experiment of bringing over a lot of English players, you know, there's a bit of question now, isn't there, whether it's working or not. But I just wondered what you made of the Josh Hodgson situation.
Yeah, look, Hodgson came to Canberra when I was there and, you know, legend of a bloke. And we actually spoke about, you know, since I've been to Rovers and sort of come back, I've seen him a few times around and caught up with him. And, you know, he's always been someone who's, you know, so hardworking. And I think that's why he's thrived in the NRL is, you know, Ricky really prides him, you know, that he's such a hard worker and he puts the team first. And I think he's come out and he sort of said that throughout. I know he's come out in different articles and Spilt has spoken about here. It's not about him. It's about what's best for the team. And obviously, throughout a career, as things, I guess, in terms of player movements, you're always going to be upset when, you know, a player or a friend who is playing in that team gets moved on or has some movement from a club. But I know that his intentions are going to be always good. And so from that point of view, whether he, you know, I know that what he does will be, you know, first of all, probably in the best interest of himself to look after him and his career. But at the end of the day, I know that they've still really value what he does there at Canberra. So I'm not sure what the intricate details of it. But I do know that, I guess, whenever other players around you are getting moved on and whatnot. And I still think that the English player coming to the NRL game is so valuable because we've seen what an impact, you know, English players can have. And it's great, I guess, for me, because you can sort of, you know, people will say, oh, you know, what's the Super League game like? And what are the players like that are over there? When you see some of that talent coming over here and not only doing well, but actually really making their mark in the game over here, it's great to sort of, great advocate for what the standard's like over there. And so I know that he's also got ambitions of going into a coaching role, and I can 100% see that, because I remember the time even that I had a camera back then is how much he helped me, and he sort of drove the standards by his actions. So, yeah, very, very, very great bloke.
Yeah, he seems it, and obviously he was Rovers captain as well. And there is a lot of English players, mate, under the radar as well. Obviously the Knights, I think Bailey Hodgson, Josh's cousin's there, Dom Young from Huddersfield, so Herbie Farmworth at the Broncos. So I do think it is good for the English game. And obviously we do a bit of research on all the guests that we have, Hef, but we completely missed about this tour that you mentioned. So we're going to go back to that. How did that come about? You toured England, France, Wales. Who did you play against? Where did you visit in England? And who was on that tour? Is there any NRL players playing now?
So, yeah, we it kind of was a different sort of kind of route that I came in on that. What happens is it kind of is based for players who are not always based in the centre of major cities, and it gives an opportunity for players outside of that. So it's like an Australian team but based through the AAS. And so what that was is I got the opportunity that each school holidays we would come over and train in a bit of a professional sort of environment here at the AAS, and they'd bring in coaches to kind of run that, which was, for me at the time, was a big thing, because often when you didn't, I guess it was sort of filled that gap between continuing to develop players. And it's not a big thing now through the AAS that they do, but at the time, so Brian Johnson was kind of brought all that in, and he was kind of leading that. And I was lucky enough that I was actually the first person to get the Brian Johnson medal. Actually, he was for player of the tournament, and I was able to, we played two games in France, one in Toulouse and one in Avignon. And then we then went in to come over to England, and we sort of based in there different parts. I can't remember all the details, and we went over to Cardiff and played a game as well against the Welsh, and I know we did quite well against them. And then can't remember the exact teams we played. We definitely played the English universities side because we were only quite a young team. Like, most of the guys were definitely under sort of 18. And then we sort of played the French 19s, the French 17s as well. And But yeah, as I say, it was absolutely unreal experience. And more so, to be honest, in terms of my development, it was probably all the training and camps that we had leading up to that, that kind of bridged that gap between getting you to a standard that got you to being a part of, I guess, NRL sort of setups. And so that development that the kind of, it was through the NRL as well, they were helping out with it. But it was such a good thing for us, because I remember we had the wrestling coaches from Melbourne at the time. He was leading a lot of the wrestling side of it. And, you know, I was a country kid who, you know, we just did tackling and we just did it. It was never a whole lot of technique based, and it was just getting in front and making your tackles and running hard and finding space. And now the game started to have, you know, a bit of science. There was a lot more strategy in how you did things. And all of a sudden I was able to take that knowledge and take it back to my sort of local footy or club footy, and then again eventually take it into when I was picked up into a, you know, NRL system. I kind of had that base before me. And I remember doing a wrestling session, still one of the hardest sessions I've ever done in my life. And I can understand why Melbourne do so well. And it just, I'm going into my room that we finished this session and we just absolutely got flogged. It was so hard. And then we went in and I remember thinking, I don't know if I can do this. Like, if this is what it's going to be like. But I think once you get a taste and you know what that feels like, anything else is much easier. And from there, I guess that's where your kind of drive for hard work comes from. So, no, really, really good experience. Such a, to see all those places and to get that, to be a part of that system was unreal.
Yeah, I bet, mate. And obviously, like you mentioned there, he was just like a countryside. That's great, because the pathway, everyone thinks the pathway is signing when you're young, just staying in that one system and then making your first grade debut, or especially over here with the under-16s and 19s, but there is so many inroads. And obviously your time at Canberra came to an end. You left, you joined the Panthers, you was in the summer training squad, you did secure a spot in the 2016 NRL squad, but you played in the Intra-Super Premiership, which is a, you know, really tough division. There's a lot of NRL players still playing in it now. How was that experience, obviously, moving from Canberra? You was a local lad. I obviously mean local 2.5 hours away, because it means a bit different over here. But then moving to Penrith, how was that, mate? Was it a bit of a change for you?
Yeah, you're right. The local, you two and a half hours, you get from one side to the other over there. But kind of going from to Penrith, yeah, it was a bit of a different move for me. I kind of was unlucky in that down here in Canberra, I'd had periods where I'd strung a few games together, which was excellent. And that kind of set me up a little bit, because I was in a good team and came into a really nice sort of system, and we did well as a team. And then, but was unlucky in that I had some, had sort of had two shoulder surgeries within 3 years, and had a bunch of like small injuries there as well. And Canberra saw potential in me as a player. But unfortunately, just purely, you know, I sat in a room and they said, look, we're going to have to let you go, you know, just because we can't sort of get enough games out of you. And I completely understood. And I had my manager sort of working in the background, you know, getting me, trying to find an opportunity for me. And I then sat in a meeting with Gus Gould, and we met, and that was really good. And so we worked out, you know, we met in this place, and it, you know, I remember getting the email to say that I was going to get to sit down with him, and I was just, you know, thought, how good is this? Like, one of the big people within the game. So, yeah, I got to sit down with him and talk through what he saw in me, and, you know, for someone of his stature within the game to actually even know who I was a big thing. And we sort of sat down, and I remember a conversation I had with him is one of the recruitment officers said, oh, look, what do you see as your weaknesses that you want to work on? And so I rattled off a few things that I thought, you know, maybe I could be better at and whatnot. And he turned and said to Gus, you know, what do you think about, you know, Hef's game? Do you think it's what are his weaknesses? He said, I don't care about his weaknesses. I want to know what are his strengths. And it sort of took me back. I was like, okay, what are my strengths? And, you know, I rattled off some of the things that, you know, kind of made up my game. And yeah, it was just so cool to sort of sit with him. And I remember when I got the call from a manager to say that they were going to even have a meeting, you know, I don't think I slept all night knowing that I was going to have a go into an NRL system on a 2-year deal. And yeah, that's kind of how it went from there. It was in, you know, as soon as I got an offer, they put a proper offer on the table and off I went. And yeah, had a good, yeah, learn a whole heap up there again. A whole bunch of new players, new place. But yeah, kind of got hamstrung by, you know, some different injuries. Hamstrings were really playing up at the time and that sort of pulled me back. So I kind of had to, was able to play with some really good players. And, you know, the Penrith mould that has come through is off the back of that. The players that were there at the time, you know, in those junior grades, the under-20s and whatnot, your Nathan Cleary's and whatnot. I remember Nathan was, he was in the under-20s 1 week. The following week, he came to play New South Wales Cup with us and he sat in the locker next to me. And I remember him being so nervous, like absolutely shaking in his boots. He was, you know, he was almost at the point of vomiting. And I remember sort of sitting there and saying to him, mate, you're absolutely killing it at under-20s level. You'll do absolutely fine here. He had a really good game. The next week he played NRL and I think he was man of the match. So in the space of 3 weeks, he sort of progressed straight through. So Penrith was such a good system. Like, I don't think I've been a part of a system that's so good. The depth there was unreal. The way we were looked after as players. I wasn't there when, you know, there was a brand new facility that had just been put in. You know, $20 plus million had been put in. The facilities we had were great. I was helping out actually with the S&C with the junior teams. And I remember going and seeing the junior teams and thinking, goodness me, these blokes are like men. They're just built like men and they play like men. They're just strong. And yeah, it was just an absolute turnstile of just good players coming through there. So I can understand why they're having the success they're having. And yeah, kind of got to the end of my time. No, end of that year at Penrith, I had some good periods and I genuinely thought I probably was at different stages in the year. I trained throughout the week with a thought that I might even get an NRL debut. I was there in the team a few times and, you know, at the last minute they made a late reshuffle or something like that. But yeah, look, it didn't happen and I don't have any sort of regrets on that. I was sort of brought down with a few bit of injuries and at the end of that year, unfortunately got the same sort of similar sort of tap on the shoulder is that, you know, kind of got potential and whatnot. But unfortunately, you know, I was at the point where the hamstrings were almost chronic where they thought that I wouldn't be able to recover from. And I was able to find a specialist along with the other physios, found a specialist down in Canberra and we got that sorted and came to Rovers. And yeah, that's where that started.
Well, tell us about that time, Hef, because obviously you've finished at Penrith and obviously you're a bit worried about hamstrings, injuries, etc. And then obviously Rovers, you know, horrendous time, relegated from the Super League into Championship. So tell us about how the interest came about, how, you know, who got in touch with you when you was leaving Penrith and how you got the move to Hull Kingston Rovers.
Yeah, it was... It was an interesting one. Like, I was actually telling this story to someone not long ago. You know, it always sort of comes up at different points. But I went over to Thailand with a couple of mates that are from Penrith that I'd played with, and our partners. We'd all kind of gone over there for a week or so, and I was in that real limbo about what am I going to do. So we were there waiting sort of to see what was going to happen, and you know, my manager would send through an email in the morning and I'd wake up early when I was over there and I'd be checking my emails going, okay, what's the options that I have? You know, and it was, you're going to go to this club. You know, this, we've potentially got an offer here from this club. I think it'd be a great opportunity for you. And I'd spend all day, you know, go off and do things for the day and I'd be thinking about it. I think, oh, I wonder what that club would be like for me. And then the next day I'd check the emails again. You know, I'd try and find some Wi-Fi and I'd get onto the email again and, oh no, mate, that deal's fallen through. We're not gonna be able to do that. You might be able to go here, and you might be able to go here. And I think, goodness me, like, what is actually happening? And also, I still had a year to run at Penrith, so they'd offered me out. But if otherwise, I was probably just gonna go back to Penrith, which I wasn't that keen on, because they kind of told me that, you know, unfortunately I wasn't a part of their plans. I didn't want to be at a club where I guess I felt a bit unwanted. I got a, started to get some rumblings that there were, you know, I'd organised a Maltese passport through my grandfather just at the back end of Penrith without knowing that they were going to sort of move me on. But I always thought that it was something I wanted to do to get my, get that on board. So just in case an opportunity came up, I was ready. And thank goodness I did. I got that sorted. And I got back from Thailand and I was in the shearing shed with my dad and my uncle and whatnot. And I was just helping out. I'm pretty useless on the farm, but I was helping out with that and doing whatever I could. And I remember asking dad, I said, I've just got an email from my manager that Tim Sheens and Hulk AR are interested, you know, and they've got a deal on the table. And this was the first time I'd actually, in that period, I'd got an actual deal on the table that was definitely something I could go through with. He said, oh, you know, all right. And he's going, yeah. He said, I said, but I have to know, I have to tell him within the next 12 hours because of time delay. Like, obviously, in the time they'd sent it over, got it to my manager, got it to me, they said, we need to know by the end of today. Well, that was in 12 hours' time. And so I'm sitting there, I said to Dad, what should I do? And he said, I'm too busy. I can't talk to you right now. I've got all this sheep work to get through. I can't talk to you.
Cheers, Dad.
Thanks for that. I've got to make a decision to move the other side of the world. Just a really big life decision, but you're all right. And I said, he said, you're not there anyway. So I got in and I got to lunchtime. He still didn't want to talk about it. He was too busy. And so I was rang my fiance now, and I spoke to her, and you know, she was, you know, go do it. You know, if you want to do it and you think it's right for you, 100% do it. And I come back at the end of the day, and I sent him an email. Look, I'm 100% ready to go. Like, I want to go. And got to the end of the day, and Dad goes, oh, what'd you end up deciding? I said, oh, I'm flying out in 2 days. So, you know, quickly packed the bags and booked the flight, and I was there by the end of the week. And that's kind of, that's where it started. All of a sudden, you know, we got the release order from Penrith. We got the deal with Hulk AR. I didn't even look at it. I just signed the thing. I didn't even care what was on the paper. I pretty much just wanted to come and see how I'd go, because I knew that it was going to be a fresh start for me and an opportunity to sort of prove myself. And, was unreal.
How much did you obviously know about Old Kingston Rovers at the time? Because obviously, being in Super League for about 10 years, we had been relegated. Was it the fact of you wanted a new challenge? Did Tim Sheens influence that? Because obviously, he's a legend over there, West Tigers, Australia. He'd come over, then he was our coach. Was it just kind of like a fresh start? I want to get over there. Or did you have to do, did you do any research on the flight over?
Definitely Googled Hull to start with. Didn't work where it was. And what, you know, what was it about and whatnot. And I'd always been, like, growing up, I'd watch the Super League because it comes on early in the morning and I'm a stupidly early riser. But it come on, and so I'd watch it there and see some of, definitely always the finals, and we'd watch that. But the KR influence, I guess, came from a lot of the Canberra players who had gone over there, the Jane Tilters, the Campos, you know, even not from Canberra, Manzalato, those guys who were there. Dobson, obviously, being, he was a junior boy as well. I remember my grandmother always, you know, telling me about how he was going in the Super League and how he was doing so well and whatnot. And yeah, then it kind of came from there, and I just slowly got a bit more of an appreciation for it. And but yeah, didn't know anyone like over in the UK. I kind of just went there sort of blind, and I guess in terms of the derby sort of things, you know, KRFC didn't have a great appreciation of that at the time. You know, I'd always seen the big clubs, I guess, you know, within that, as you know, I'd seen a lot of those who were playing in finals and whatnot. And at the time, I got an understanding from Tim Sheens about what had happened, and he was definitely a big influence in me coming on, you know, even for me. And I think being an Australian coach and knowing what he'd done within the game was big, and trying to find someone who was going to be able to narrow down exactly what I needed to do at this stage in my career in terms of from a positional point of view, because I sort of floated around the different positions. Sorry, my little puppy's jumping all over me. I guess someone to come in and give me some direction in that regard. And he sort of spoke about what he saw in me and what position he wanted even before I'd left. He watched a lot of footage on me before, and that shows what Tim Sheens is like as a bloke. He just lives and breathes rugby league. You know, he knew for someone who, you know, didn't have much of a stature in the game, you know, I was still a young player. He knew so much about me, where I was from. He knew about, you know, how I played. He knew where I was going to fit within his plans and what plans he kind of had for me. And to more than anything, I think as a player, you want someone to put confidence in you. And that's what he did. It wasn't that he had the best game plan in the world or the best this. It was that he put confidence in you as an individual player. And that's what sort of brought it out. And so, yeah, I think he was definitely a big influence in me getting over there. And that's where it sort of, you know, I'd actually met him in 05, the year they won the comp. I told him this when I was there. I got the chance to be a ball boy for the Tigers. I was running against, it was like a national sort of running cross country, so running event. And I, you know, Dad got talking to one of the guys who was representing New South Wales with me. And he said he was on the board at the Tigers at the time. He said, look, mate, if you love your league so much, you know, we'll get you up and get your son to come up and be a ball boy. And I thought that was the bee's knees. Like, it was so good. And yeah, I got to meet Tim Sheens. I wore, you know, this really oversized shirt and got to run the tee out for Benji Marshall, who was my hero at the time. And such a cool experience for me. And yeah, it was nice to be able to tell him, you know, however many years later that, you know, I'd actually met him before and, you know, I'd been in the change rooms with him. And yeah. So that was really cool.
Yeah, of course, Benji Marshall's still going strong now. But I wonder what it was like for, you know, you signed for Rovers when he was 21. The club's going through a huge transition. You know, the supporters are still reeling from relegation, but we're looking forward up and for, you know, promotion back to Super League. You've come over on a deal that you've agreed pretty much only a few days earlier and had a real tight deadline to seal the deal. And then you're joining the club with players like Adam Quinlan, Mossy Masoi, you know, some really big names. What was it like them first few days coming over to Hull? And was it a bit of a shock? Was it, you know, obviously you're coming in winter as well, so the weather's going to be a completely different for you. I just wonder what them first few days and then weeks were like for you when you came to Rovers.
Dark. Dark. to come in the middle of winter and you get the, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock and the sun's going down and you're going, what's going on here? I think the first time I toured with the AAS, with the sort of Australian squad, everything happened so quickly and we moved from country to country that I didn't really fully appreciate. And I was younger as well, didn't appreciate, you know, England as a place and what was going on. But to sort of come over and see, you know, how different but so similar the countries are, it was super cool. But I remember, you know, obviously you're moving to a new country and there've been plenty of nerves about how you're going to settle in and, you know, I guess how you're going to fit into the system and, you know, is this going to work for me? You're so far from home, you don't, not 100% sure, but the club was so supportive in that regard. Like, and even NZ Sheensy himself, I was living in the same for the first part. They got me an apartment in around there and, you know, he was picking me up and taking me to training and stuff like that. So, yeah, I guess those first few days were just so different to what I'd seen, though. Even in the sense of, like, you know, the simple things like the food we were eating at lunchtime and the way that people interact with each other. And I remember the first few days, well, probably not first few days, first few weeks, not really understanding what anyone was saying to me. just because we've got all these, like, accents just flying around the room, especially, like, we go to lunch and, like, they're all speaking across the table and yahooing and whatnot and just layering up as they do and just not when they all speak together and speak so quickly, I just didn't understand what anyone was saying. And, you know, it was all good fun. And that was the individuals themselves, you know, so welcoming and so down to earth in that sense. And you could tell that they, you know, we're throughout their journey. And I guess in the relegation part, coming from here, I guess I didn't have that hurt that everyone else kind of had, or those who had carried on. And at the time, you kind of go and you're trying to get an appreciation by listening to the fans and meeting with them, which I found a big part of what I did was trying to get an understanding of where they come from and from the players. And it wasn't spoken about as much as I guess I probably thought. I guess there was a whole influx of new players coming through, and it was a big sort of turnover. And for me, I think it kind of worked well in some ways, is that if you had the same roster, potentially you're living off the scars of what had happened in the past. But because it was some fresh blood that had come in and just wanted to play footy and were so determined, and it was a lot of guys who, like myself, who had come over for an opportunity, Australian-based ones, had come for an opportunity to try and prove himself and to be a part of the game, that I guess we kind of fed off the energy that was a new squad, which was really cool. But, yeah, I remember the sort of first friendly, you know, got a bit excited in that because it just the atmosphere was like nothing I'd ever experienced. You know, I played in Auckland Nines and, you know, you've got Eden Park, which is, you know, 60,000 people. And it doesn't even compare to, you know, packing out, you know, Craven Park, you know. So the difference in terms of, you know, what the atmosphere is completely different. The singing and the chanting, it makes such a difference. So to come into that was, again, another really big change, I guess, in my career.
I think we was trying to change the identity of the club. I think when we went down, mate, obviously, like you mentioned, you'd like to Benka Kane, Sean Lund, Matty Marsh, Mins, they'd all been there, and you know, people were still hurting. And I remember Benka Kane did his vlogs that went on YouTube and LKR TV, and it was trying to get the fans back together. And we did it, the ball rolling. Obviously, we beat LFC 40 points to 16 at the KC Stadium. You scored in that, like you said. And I remember your celebration to the fans. It was great to see. Went to Leeds Rhinos, who ended up being champions of Super League that year. Got a bit of a tonking, but so did many teams that season. Then you went to Tenerife, warm winter camp. But then, the first game of the season, I'll always remember. I was actually in Australia at the time, so I didn't want there. All my mates were there. And it had been called off. It was going to get called off because Bradford went to liquidation and then they got a few players from Leeds. So it was hit and miss. And obviously it was the sad news that Colin Hutton had passed away. Obviously you wouldn't have known Colin, probably. You wouldn't have met him because he was very ill in them last few months. But it was a really sad time at that point of all Kingston Rovers. And then performances on the pitch. Bearing in mind, yeah, it was against the likes of Bradford, Dewsbury, Swindon. But we could only play what was in front of us. I remember the likes of you, Jordan Abdul, who's now at Old Kingston Rovers and leading the Man of Steel leaderboards. You know, Benka Kane, Lee Jewett, Ben Kavanagh really stepped up, and yourself, Kieran Moss, Adam Quinlan. We were scoring points for fun, but like I said, it was who we could only play against at the time. And I remember thinking, you know what, this team, yeah, we're not going to be world beaters, we're not the best team, but it seemed like a real unity, like we'd had the previous years when we'd had the likes of Clint Newton, Ben Galea, and Michael Dobson. Obviously, it was in terrible circumstances that it was in the second tier, but for you guys on the pitch, did you feel a real connection between yourselves and the fans again?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've probably only been a part of two squads where I think I felt that like continuity. And I think it was probably one of those was in my first year of under-20s here at Canberra, where whatever you do, because of the connection you have between you, things just turn to gold. You know, and if you get yourself in a certain situation where you're down by points, you're going to find a way. And there's this trust and there's this belief that you're going to find a way to get it done. And you're right in terms of who we were playing against. And that was a big adjustment for me in terms of I don't think I'd had played against teams where there was such a big gap at different stages throughout the season. And when people would talk to you and say, you probably should belt that team, you know, this week. And because I didn't have that background of what that team was like, I didn't go into games thinking like that. All I was thinking was this ruthless sort of mentality. Or I think we, as a squad, we had this mentality that it doesn't matter who we're kind of put in front of us. We've just got to get the job done. And what happens is you learn how to win. And the games that you get pushed challenge you. And I think even throughout that 2017 season, being able to play some of those Challenge Cup games and stuff, we learn a lot of lessons, you know, and to be able to lose some of those games actually probably set us up better. And it's sort of everything sort of just went to plan. You know, it was never going to be a season where you went through unbeaten. You know, largely we did, but there was, you know, even the back end, I was actually out that week, but we lost to Luce. I think it was the last game before the qualifiers. And I remember sort of thinking, this is probably a good thing because it's going to give us a real shake up in terms of we can't sort of just coast through this. We have to sort of lift the mark again when we get to, you know, the Super 8, the qualifiers. And but yeah, you're right. In terms of the connection we have with the team, both on and off the field, like I know that it may, once you've got that connection and we were all, you know, we'd celebrate together, we'd play well together, and it was really tight-knit. And it's the same thing I felt back in, you know, earlier grades, that when we were really good off the field and had that connection, we played well on. And things, there was no one within that squad that had a different agenda. Everyone was on the same line. We knew exactly what we had to do. I guess sometimes when you're in a season where your only goal is to get promoted, whereas often sometimes you might be more fighting for survival as your, you know, that shouldn't be your goal, but sometimes, you know, that comes into it. When you have one goal and that's all you want to do, then you kind of do everything you can in your power to get there. And I knew I was not coming back to Australia until we got promoted. I was 100%, that's, you know, because I wanted to play Super League from a personal point of view, and I wanted to get to that point. And yeah, to get it done was just, yeah, crazy.
Did you have a question?
I know Joe mentioned there about the connection with the fans.
Sorry?
Go on, Chris, you go, mate. Sorry, pal.
Yeah, Joe just mentioned, obviously, the connection with the fans. Yeah, sorry, mate, just breaking up a little bit there, Hef. No, I was just going to say, Joe mentioned about the connection with the fans. I wondered for you personally, was he anyone in the squad or people in the squad who you sort of gravitated towards more? Because obviously we had Jake Butler-Fleming, we then signed Zach Docker-Clay. And I just wonder if you were starting to form your own friendships with someone or anyone particularly in the squad at that time.
Yeah, I think the natural thing to do is, you know, in that situation is to kind of, you know, gravitate towards, you know, those imports who have come in, you know, Aussies and your Kiwis and things like that, Pacific Islanders. And I was really lucky that in some ways when I first got there, none of those guys were there. The only sort of like Bobby Blair was there and a couple of actually Rovers players were on their way coming home, you know, your Campos and Tilsey was there briefly in the off season. So I had a chance to sort of get immersed in, I guess, being with the English based lads, and that was really good for me, you know, to meet all them and kind of just tack on to whatever they were doing, because up until I guess we had some of the you know, the import boys come in, you know, that was kind of who I was hanging around with. And probably the biggest one, as people I guess might know, is, you know, Ryan Shaw was probably a big one. He kind of took me under his wing, you know, early on and sort of showed me the ropes and you know, showed me around Hull and took me to his home. And that was even within the first week. Yeah, kind of was really, really nice to have someone like that who wanted to do that, and it took me out to see things. You know, when you first get there, you're still getting a whole heap of things organized, you're trying to get yourself a, you know, a bit of a car to get around and a place, and he was more than happy to help out with, you know, how he could help with those things. And yeah, he's still a good friend today, he and his family, and you know, his parents and everything as well. So you know, they will remain sort of, you know, lifelong sort of friends. And but yeah, all those guys in that squad were so great in different ways, you know. And the people like Benny Kikan man who had so much passion for the club, and to see him and what it meant to people like him who had, you know, grown up in around there, and you know how much his connection with the fans. And I probably, you know, jumped on the back of that and tried to, you know, do my bit with in being a part of the fans, because I love that side. You know, to be a part of that sort of culture was so good, and I think that helped in our push back into Super League, is, you know, getting the fans back on board and showing them, I guess, the enthusiasm we had and the goal that we'd kind of set. And to meet so many different people and what it meant, rugby league meant to them, and specifically like KR, was epic. You know, they were living and breathing it. You know, we talk about how it happens over here, but I think it's another level over there in terms of how much they love the game and they support their team, you know. So it really is personal. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you obviously knew what that meant, because you signed a two-year deal, didn't you? An extension in the June. Obviously, we'll speak about what happened in 2018 in a little while. But I just want to move on, mate, to probably the most important time of that 2017 season. We always knew we'd be finishing in the top four. You know, we won the league leader shield. That was great. But August came, the middle eights. It arrived on our doorstep, and we was going to play Halifax, Lee and London in August. And that was probably the key thing. You know, we had Halifax and London at home. Lee away would beat in the Challenge Cup. First up was Halifax. We beat them 26 points to 12. Victory was secured in them games. It was knockout footy. It doesn't matter how you win as long as you get the 2 points. And then we went to Lee. Sean Lunsford, one of his best games ever for Old Kingston Rovers, scoring 2 tries. Would beat a Super League team. And it was like, you know what? We're nearly there. London came, was 27 points to 8 up at one point. London got a lot of tries back, but we did win, and we only needed 2 more wins. And it was kind of like the tide was turning, mate. We was playing some rugby, really good rugby. We needed to get our defence sorted a little bit, but we were still clinging on to them victories. And the 2 main games, I think what proved Old Kingston Rovers' worth was that away victory at Featherstone. Obviously, at Featherstone, it's like playing uphill. It's like running up Mount Kilimanjaro in the first half when we did up at that hill in West Yorkshire. But that game, Widnes Vikings, Ryan Shaw, you mentioned there, your good friend and teammate, when he did that full length for Ryan, heard the East Stand make noise like that. I've heard it about 4 times in my lifetime. That 12 points to 6 game, the night out after, that game will forever live in my memory, because it was a fantastic atmosphere, fantastic game. Rovers were back in Super League the first time of asking. How good was that for you and the boys? It must have been electric, mate.
Yeah. One of the best days of my life, easily, without doubt. I remember, like, you know, going around that, it was just so surreal. Like, thinking about that now, it actually kind of gives me goosebumps in terms of what it means to me and what that time of my life was like. And not just that, but the whole season, the ups, the downs, the, you know, because if you don't have the downs, the ups aren't as sweet as well. And getting around and, I guess at the end of the game, and I remember, I think my partner must have passed the phone over to my mum and dad, and for someone, I know for me personally, I'd been through a lot of injury and, you know, sort of been moved around different clubs. To feel success like that was so, so good for me, I guess, and it was one of the moments I won't forget, and to look across and have the, you know, the East End, you know, just going absolutely berserk was unreal. And I remember the, you know, in terms of that game, I remember like making they sort of made that raid, and I sort of tackled the fella down low, and sure, he sort of swooped in and got the intercept, and he ran and scored. And, you know, in typical Shorey fashion, he's layering up as if, you know, it's all over and how good is he and whatnot. And I remember just grabbing him by the throat and just like dragging him in. And when we had that type of friendship, you know, like we were close like that, and I grabbed him and said, mate, it's not over yet. Like we've still got a good job to do here. You know, he was celebrating as if he was, you know, going to down a few beers already. But, you know, and I was obviously very confident at that point, but I wanted that final whistle to go, you know, and there was a bit of a period to go. There was a time over in the far corner. I've probably never been so tired in my life, like during a game, in terms of, because it was so low scoring, there wasn't like a whole lot of stoppage. It was just back and forth and a real grindy kind of game. And I know down our edge, we were getting hammered, you know, and they were coming and coming and coming, and you know, we were just doing what we could to make it. It probably wasn't looking that pretty, but we were just doing whatever we could to stop Winter scoring. And there was one point where myself, Jamie Ellis, and Shorey sort of somehow got this guy over the sideline. I can't remember who it was. And I remember just like laying on the floor thinking, I am so exhausted. Like, and just looking around at both of them, and they were both lying on the ground as if they weren't going to get up. And you hear the East End start roaring, and you know, you've got no choice. You get up and kind of go again. And, you know, we knew we were getting close. And once we did that, once we sort of had held them out so many times, I kind of knew we were going to, you know, had faith we were going to get there. And obviously we didn't know that the score in the Warrington game, I think it was, you know, fans were sort of yelling it out, but you're so focused in what you're doing there and then that you don't know. And once that final whistle blew, you kind of just running around and people, you know, the bench are coming on saying that it's all over and we've been promoted. And yeah, crazy feeling. And yeah, something I'll remember for the rest of my life, and the people I shared it with, you know. And the night after was good fun. A couple of days we had, you know, there. And yeah, so special.
I don't know about you, Joe, but for me, that witness, yeah.
You're breaking up, Chris. You need to sort your Wi-Fi out.
I don't know about you, Joe, but for me, that witness game, I was there sometimes in sport and probably... Have you got me?
Yeah, mate, but I think when me and Hef are speaking to you, sorry about this, guys, you're about 10 seconds behind, mate.
Well, mate, normally people say I'm about fucking 2 days behind, never mind 10 seconds.
Go on, speak now, mate. We can hear you.
No, I was just going to say, so, and probably Hef can relate to it more, but that witness game, I was supremely confident that we'd win that. And I think in sport sometimes, you just feel like whether it's because you're building up to something, or you just get a sense or a feeling that no matter what happens, we was going to win that game. And obviously Shaw's interception underlined that, and Hef's right about the defence. Yeah. You know, as the game went on, you just saw it. And even though it was a tight scoreline, I never had any doubt that Rovers were going to win that game. And you're right, I think it was more relief than celebration. We was relieved that was going back to Super League. And all season, you know, we'd been picking up big wins, but it was never really about them wins. It was all about the end result. It was all about promotion, and it was just that outpouring of joy, outpouring of a relief that we'd finally done it. But also we'd done it with a squad of players that seemed to really buy into what the purpose of why they was there and what their job for that season was. And you know, we'll talk about Tim Sheens a little bit, Joe, because he still divides Rovers fans' opinions. You know, some people love him for the job that he did at Rovers, and some people think he should have done a bit more once we got into Super League. So it's really interesting to listen to what Hef thinks about Tim Sheens and get it from a player's perspective. But ultimately, he did the job at the time. And one thing I wanted to ask you, Hef, and we've asked Josh Mantelato, Justin Morgan, Clint Newton, they've all said what a great night out Hull is, and I'm sure there's no better night out than on the back of promotion.
Yeah, it was a good one. I think it was, you know, and to do it like with all the fans there as well, and you know, just to celebrating with them, and you know, having a beer with those guys, and you know, seeing the relief on their face and the, you know, the celebration and whatnot, that was super cool to do it there, you know, in Hull, and you know, everyone being there and pouring out on the street, and yeah, really, really cool. And I think it is a good night out. It's, you know, everyone's kind of, it's all in there together. And but yeah, I guess the, you know, where you, I always found it funny how, you know, certain places where, you know, were more FC, you know, dominated, there were certain places that you probably sort of steered clear from, and more where you'd go if you were a Rovers fan or a Rovers player. And that was always a good laugh. And but yeah, to sort of celebrate with everyone, and you know, even all our, you know, coaches and support staff, you know, throughout the year, you know, you get along, but at the end of the day, everything was always kept under wraps in terms of our celebrations. We knew that there was something bigger that we were working towards. It was, you know, you win the league leader shield and you go, okay, you know, we needed to win that, you know, we'd done enough to get there. And, you know, but it's not, you don't really hang your hair down. It was kind of, yep, that's a good feather in our cap with what made that win, but now there's still something big, So to kind of get to the end and have a good celebration, and you know, I think the one for me was, you talk about how we were always going to win. I remember saying we're going to, you know, Mossy had moved over there and he was living with us at the time. And he just said, we'll win today. Like, we're going to win today. We've got really no choice. You know, that's what's going to happen. And you're right. The belief was there because nothing, and you did everything in your power because there wasn't really any doubt. You knew that we were going to do everything we could to win. And that's what, kind of what happened, is that belief was there. And I'd actually booked in surgery for like 3 days later, 2 or 3 days later, to have on my shoulder, because I played the last 12 weeks with a dislocated shoulder. It kept coming out all the time and the physio was pulling it back in all the time, or I was putting it back in. And so I was getting that needled up before every game and needled in both ribs, you know, just as like a painkilling sort of injection. And I think there was a game throughout that qualifiers that, first time in my life, I'd really experienced where it was, games were played with the will, where it was a win at all costs. I think when you're a bit younger, if you have an injury like that, the club's probably, or you as an individual, are a bit more cautious. Obviously, the player always has the final say, but the fact that we turned up the game and there's a sheet on there that tells you what time you're having your needle, like that's what time you're getting your injection. And I think there would have been 6 or 7 people who were all on different, having different needles to, you know, get them through the game. And that was how much people were putting on the line to make sure they were getting through it. And the pain they were in after the games, particularly those older players who were managing a range of different things. I know it was killing me. I was almost tackling with one shoulder a majority of the time. But yeah, I guess that was a big part of it, how much people were willing to do to you know, get the club back up there. And if you've got the right minded people to do it, then that's kind of the results sort of speak for themselves.
Yeah, I think it'll always be a season that all fans remember for the positive reasons, mate, and it was job done. And then we move on to 2018. So much optimism for you, and we're going to take a step away from the rugby now because we know what happened on the pitch, we know what happened, you know, in that season. We're in 2021 now, but we want to speak to you, you know, about obviously the concussion injuries. And it, at the time, even 3 years ago, it was kind of new, it was kind of rare, and you don't realise now with all the HIA tests in both the NRL and in Super League how much it does happen. But for you, mate, how did it all start? Obviously, for you guys listening, if you don't know, if you've been living in a bubble or whatever, but if you're doing, obviously, Heath was part of the 2018 Super League squad. You had a lot of concussions, mate, didn't you? After the Widnes game, which you actually scored on the 7th of April, that was the last time you played for the Robins. You were stood down after 7 appearances in Super League. Tim Sheen said it's not a cruciate ligament injury, for example, and he'll be back in an X amount of weeks. It's an injury which is really starting to surface a lot over the last few years. We asked him to go to London to see specialists and have scans, and the specialist said in 3 months' time, we'll talk again. And then obviously on the 22nd of August, mate, the club announced that yourself and Tim Sheens had come to a decision that you was going to release yourself from the club and head back to Australia for further treatment. How was them 6 months, mate? And just tell us what it was feeling like, how it was on a daily basis, and how obviously your rugby league career was so sadly cut short.
Yeah. Coming through the grades here, I probably only had a couple of knocks, probably as much as any other player. I'm guessing 3 or 4 at different points over a longer period of time. And then from Easter 2017 to Easter sort of 2018, I had 5, I guess, where I was sort of completely knocked out for a brief period of time. But there was probably a whole bunch in there where I probably had other knocks that I kind of played through. I didn't fully get treated. I wasn't taken off the field. I probably was kind of playing through some of those, either off the back of me not quite understanding what the difference was, and obviously trying to do what was best for the team and the club at the time. And then, yeah, I guess it probably where it started to narrow down for me was the Witness game was probably the final, you know, needle in the haystack. But I think the one before against Saints kind of came forward, and it was again off a kickoff. And I guess the difference for me was all of my concussions were different. And some of them were related to the fact that I had a tendency to go across onto my right shoulder because I was protecting my left, because it had been like dislocated, like the back end of the year. So it was coming in and out, and it was obviously painful. So I was using my right shoulder a lot more, and I probably was a little bit more dominant on that side and was playing on the right hand side of the field. So that kind of puts you in an awkward position. Your head comes across your body. And I got into that sort of, I guess all I'm saying there is that each of the knocks were different, and people were kind of saying, oh, it needs to be the tackling technique you to work on. It needs to be this, but sometimes it was with the ball, sometimes it was without. And yeah, there were probably things that I was working on in training, but when you get in the heat of a game, the way you react is, you know, subconscious, you just do things because you have to stop that play or you have to make that break. And you don't have the time to think about, okay, I need to get my feet positioned in a right spot to get ready for a left shoulder tackle. You think, I've got to get across and make this tackle. And it just happens all in an instant. And I probably got myself in some unlucky sort of spots. And so against Saints, that last time I copped an elbow off a kickoff. And yeah, probably there's footage probably of it there, but I got knocked out. Straight away, and you hit the deck, and I stood back up to try, and my jerk reaction was to run back on side, and I again dove straight back at the ground again. And I probably had some the days after that were really, really tough. You know, a lot of vomiting, didn't sleep a whole lot, you know, really strong headaches and whatnot. But surprisingly, my symptoms actually improved after that, quicker than I thought, and I passed all the testing. I was getting through the testing really well, and the club had pulled me, which was really good, and sent me off for the testing, and went off for testing. I was passing all that testing, and so I was getting these clearances to play, which was great as a player, because that's all you want to hear, and that's all the club wanted to hear. But in hindsight, it probably wasn't what needed to happen for me. And so I went away, and you know, I got through a period, got through training fine for that next week, and ticked all the boxes that meant I was allowed to play. And I got to the day of the game and was getting a haircut. And I started to get a headache, and, you know, I had some sort of paracetamol and that sorted that out. But it was sort of stinging in my head all day, and I couldn't work out what it was what had happened. Is all I had associated with this headache must not be related to my concussions, because I've had a period where I've been symptom free. So I just totally disassociated this headache, and that meant that I went into the game, and the knock that I had against Witness was, I guess, wasn't really much, I guess, by my standards. It wasn't a big contact, whereas the Saints one was a really big, heavy contact, and that really rocked me about, whereas the Witness one was really nothing. It was a really light hit to the head, and it was lights out pretty quickly. And I remember going, okay, I was a bit worried then, because I thought, well, that shouldn't happen. You know, if I'm to continue playing, that shouldn't happen. But I was really determined to obviously get back, and went back to the specialist again at Manchester, and he said, look, you can't play for a month. Obviously really disappointed, but understood what he was saying. You know, kind of went back through and did the testing again and got back to where I needed to be to play again. And I was due to play Magic Weekend up at Newcastle, and I had some family, my brother and cousin, flying over to watch the game. And unfortunately, in that week, return to play sort of protocol, I'd been doing some contact progressions to make sure I was ready to go. And I probably wasn't fully honest with my symptoms in that week, purely because I'd been talked up that I was going to be back for Magic Weekend. I had, you know, fans would be at the game and they'd be saying, oh, you're going to be back for Magic Weekend. And I'd be, yeah, I'm not going to let anyone down. I'm going to be back. You know, the media was, you know, the newspaper were talking about it. You know, and my family were coming over to watch, and I was so set on, okay, that's when I'm right. And if I've passed all the testing that they've asked me to do, then I'm ready to go. And unfortunately, I was like in that week when I'd started to do contact where my head was obviously getting shaken about. I was going away from training and I'd have these really stinging headaches. I wouldn't want to talk to people. I wasn't communicating with people because I didn't want people to find out that I was feeling these things. And really, really hard. Like one of the lowest points of my, I guess, in my life in that regard, because I was now slowly losing grasp of something that I'd love, the game that I'd love, you know, since I could walk. You know, I'd always loved rugby league, you know, even though I'd had a, you know, as a young kid, you know, for the first year I played soccer, but I'd always, rugby league was me. I'd watched every game. I had footies, you know, playing in the backyard. It was all about rugby league. And then to kind of see that slipping away from me was super tough. And I was driving to Manchester to pick up my brother and cousin from the airport. Must've been a few days before the game. And, you know, he's ringing me, you know, you're far off. And I was, you know, yeah, mate, come in, rah, rah. And I got to the point, I was driving down there. What was it, 62? Yeah, M62.
Yeah, correct, mate.
What's that?
Yeah, M62, that's correct.
Yeah, I thought I was right. I'm trying to get all that back. It's been too long. And so I got in the 62 and I could hardly see the road. Everything's getting blurry. My head's stinging. It has been for days. And I just pulled over the side of the road and I just burst into tears because it was that realisation that, you know, it wasn't right. You know, something was really wrong. And you know, I'd been in that during that week. I'd been going out in the middle of the night. We were living out with a house with Quinny and Mossy was up the road as well, and Jake was there as well at different stages. He'd actually moved on from the club. He was at York and Toronto, but I'd gone out in the middle of the night and was walking around because I couldn't sleep, and I, you know, was suffering. I was taking Panadol, paracetamol all the time. You know, I was taking heaps of it because I couldn't. Was just trying to manage these symptoms and you know, because all these people have been telling me everything's okay, like your testing is coming back fine. So everything was pointing that you should be okay. And I rang the physio at the time and I said, look, you know, I broke down to him and said, look, man, I just can't play. Like, I'm just in no state to play. So, you know, whatever. And he said, look, I already know that your symptoms aren't good and you're not, thing because I hadn't told anyone, but Quinny knew that I was leaving the house and walking out, and he called me and said, mate, what's going on? Like, because I was out and about in Brough, and he said, look, mate, what's going on? I said, no, I'm all good. I'm just going for a bit of a walk, you know, just trying to cover it up so that no one knew and no one would stop me from playing. And he said, look, mate, it's okay. Like, you know, you don't have to play this weekend. We've got to get this right. And yeah, that's when I got him to speak to Sheensy and said, look, I just can't play this weekend, which was devastating. It was, you know, I really wanted to play Magic Weekend. I wanted to get back into playing Super League. I just started to, because I'd had that shoulder surgery in the off season. I probably started the Super League season a little bit underdone, to be honest. I probably wasn't hitting the straps personally of where I was, and I was getting used to the difference in intensity. I just started to find my feet. I think the Huddersfield I had a solid game and a few games in there where I was doing all right and kind of got cut short there. And then, yeah, I wanted to go and find my own with the help of the physios. I wanted to go and see another specialist. I asked if I could see another specialist, and that's kind of where I got a little bit more clarity on the, I guess, what was really going on. So for the first time, I went into a room and 10 specialists sort of did a whole bunch of tests with me, and they said, oh, we can see what's wrong. And for the first time, someone was telling me that what I was feeling wasn't crazy. Like, someone was putting a finger on exactly what was wrong with me. You know, that I damaged the vestibular system and the function in terms of my, like, balance and control there had been impaired, and that I needed to work on that if I was any chance to come back to play. Yeah,
it's really devastating to hear, really. You know, a young bloke who's obviously put the body on the line for the sport that they love, but also, you know, the club that we love. So it's, you know, it's interesting to hear about what happened, but also pretty sad, really, as well, and pretty sobering, because there's plenty of young people out there who are suffering from concussions, head injuries, you know, and it's all a result of the game that they love playing. So, Yeah, it's really sad. But I just wonder, Hef, how you could just sum up your time at Rovers and you know, your abiding memory of being at the club.
Yeah. Look, and I've always said, and I remember saying when I left in a bit of a like interview of my retirement, is, you know, I don't have any regrets there of what I did. What I did was to get where I wanted to get, and I got to play at a level that, you know, I got to play in the Super League, and I got to promote a club, and I got to play, you know, at a range of different clubs on both sides of the world, and that's, and the connection I had with the fans, you know, I you know, was tried to really put myself in and a part of that. So that's what I want to see, as I guess, as my legacy, not so much the fact that my career was, you know, cut short. And I guess the time that I had there was some of the best times of my life, for sure, you know. And the people that I met there are going to be people that, you know, are always going to be there, and I'll be back at some point. You know, I got to take my, you know, some of my family over there, and I'll one day, you know, I have kids, I'll definitely take my kids there and show them where, you know, the club that I played for and what happened, and tell those stories and all the little stories that happened that played a part of it on and off the field, and how special a place it is, and a special club to me it is. And yeah, I guess the memories are long lasting, I guess, in that respect. And to see the club doing really well at the moment is awesome, and that's so good to see. And to think that in some small part way that I guess I was a part of that resurgence to get back in the Super League at the time. Obviously, it took a little bit of an adjustment, but, you know, and to see people who I played with still doing really well, both there and also at other clubs as well. Yeah, super, super cool.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned them memories, and like all Kingston Rovers said, don't matter what part you played, everyone's a part of the fabric of the club, and you was definitely so instrumental in that 2017 campaign. And there's a lot of messages since we've put you as coming on the show, mate, to finish up. Someone put, don't know if you've recorded it yet, but what a cracking bloke, as well as a cracking player. Definitely welcome back in East Hull. We've had a few. We had the potential to be absolutely world-class. Such a shame his career was cut short. Hope the symptoms are okay now, mate. Correct. A very, very classy player, but an all-round top bloke. And on my personal account, Laura Wasley, her daughter Daisy, absolutely loved you. She said you always had time to photo with her and stuff. I know you remember that family, don't you?
Yeah. Sure do. I remember always like looking across the field to kind of, you know, see where they were and always get a photo, because, you know, it was, you know, such a, it's a sight to have those people, I guess, in your corner. And well, on a good day and on a bad day, always be there and want a photo and smile, especially with kids. Like, that's so cool. And for me, I guess the big thing for, I guess, the fans to know is that I guess I'm definitely improved in my symptoms, and a lot of what's happened in the, I guess I still had a big period after I came back from the UK where I still struggled with my symptoms. Things improve really, really slowly, and that's the thing with concussion is it such a slow process. And I did a whole heap of research here. I've tried to advocate for what I'm doing as well. But yeah, I was able to get on top of that. And while I wouldn't say the symptoms are completely gone, I would say that I'm, you know, my day-to-day is much better than it was when I was at that period. And unfortunately, I probably wasn't not in a position at the moment to go back to playing, because purely, I guess, the risk is too high still. And I'm continuing to get some testing done to stay on top of making sure that I'm managing that, and there's no real changes to that. But yeah, the people that I met, you know, there's so many faces that come back in and stories, and people who had an impact on my life as well, you know. So not just what we were doing on the field, but people that I met and helped out, like the KR people, you know, would just, you know, take the shirt off their own back in some ways to help you out, you know, all sorts of different problems. You know, I'd lend you this, or can I help you with this, or how can we make your transition, you know, better. And so it's a real testament to the type of people the KR fans are.
Yeah, I know the fans will really appreciate that, mate. And obviously, we appreciate the time that you spent at the club and your time coming on this podcast. You know, we love doing these Heritage Cast out with Chris, and it's been great to speak to Andrew because we've had different ones. And you was part of that promotion campaign. And who knows, you know, if everything had stayed the same, you could have still been at the club. But life happens for a reason, and your health is the most important thing. But I've really enjoyed this episode, Chris, and you. It's been great to speak to him.
Yeah, just another real great insight into a time at the club, which, you know, obviously for a lot of Rovers fans, you know, they're holding really high esteem. So it's great to hear that you're on the mend, Hef, and that the symptoms from your concussion aren't too severe or too serious at the moment. And like Joe said, you'll always be welcome back in Eastall.
I love that. I'd love to be, you know, when we can, things open back up, I probably would have been back there earlier if the world wasn't the way it is at the moment. But I'll be looking forward to sitting up there and having a beer and sitting in that East End and hearing it roar another time. So I definitely look forward to the day that I can do that.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And the way we're playing, you might get a few roars because it's looking quite good at the moment, even though COVID is preventing us this week. Yeah. Well, thank you, mate, for coming on the show. We really do appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. You know, I think it's a great thing that you guys are doing, and thanks for having me on. I think it's a great insight for, you know, even for me as an ex-player, you know, to hear the stories of other people who were playing at the club at different times to even when I was there, and hear their stories of their experiences with the club, and to see the fans. And it's kind of a nice reminder of, I guess, that time of my life as well, you know, to see people, you know, making comments on Twitter and connecting with the podcast. It's a really, really cool thing. So,
Yeah, we really appreciate it, and I'm sure it will when the podcast is out on Saturday. So that is another Heritage Cast done, guys, with me, Drapiad, Chris Johnson, and special guest Andrew Heffernan, who played for the Robins between 2017 and 2018, playing 31 games in the red and white, scoring 20 tries. It's been a pleasure to have her on the show, Hef. Keep recovering, mate, and we hope to see you and speak to you very soon. Thanks, buddy. All the best.
Thanks, guys.